on I'm going to close it. I started it. How do I close it? I'll close it again. A minute. Turning off the power. It's going on, so it doesn't matter. The first 10 minutes is. It's the. Oh no.
You're going to send this to YU Torah?
Where's Chili? Where's our Chili? He knows this. I think it is working. It's. You know, I think it's. Yeah, I think it's recording. Okay, so let it record. It doesn't matter if it's stuck.
What are you going to do with the recording?
We'll get to Louise and we'll probably put it on the website or.
First of all, I want to make a correction on last night. Sometimes the mind is quicker than the tongue. I referred to your chief rabbi, Rabbi Nassim Adler, as a Talmud of the Chatam Sofer. What I really meant to say was his grandfather was the Rebbe of the Chatam Sofer. His grandfather was named Rabbi Nassim Adler, so that was his big yichus, and he was your chief rabbi, and New York thought if they could get a chief rabbi like him, all their problems would be changed. Now, today's lecture is very different. First of all, we spoke about Rav Hirsch, we spoke about Yeshiva University, and in the United States of America, one individual knocked the sails out of all these beautiful ideas. Had this individual not come to America, every Litvashi Yeshiva would have some sort of college, and a lot has been published already, how Teir Vadas and Chaim Berlin want to open up and say, teacher's college right after World War II, and America would have been very different because the Hasidic world, which does not go to college and does not produce doctors and lawyers and all that goes with modern humanistic education, the Hasidic world did not really influence the Litvishu world at that time. Today they've had tremendous influence, and I claim that in America there's no Litvak left. Everyone has become a Hasid, a greater degree or a lesser degree. And there are reasons why. Because when all is said and done, Hasidim survived the Holocaust with more religion than the Litvakim. Without emotion, you throw it all away. With emotion, somehow you come back. And the story is a legendary of Hasidim in America who left everything, threw everything away, but by the 1950s, with the courts, Hatzedot, developing in America, somehow the Altaheim pulled to them. There's a beautiful documentary, A People Apart on Borough Park. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. It's 1999, done by a YU graduate, down, won all the awards. It's a fabulous documentary on Borough Park. And the man who paid for it, he's no longer alive, he stars in it. He reveals the side that Hasidish Yehudit Lam survived the Holocaust, was mad at God, mad at the Jewish people, married a survivor, and when they had children, his wife said to him, you want to raise the children as Goyim and give Hitler another victory, or maybe we should give them a little Yiddishkeit. And of course, his kids went to Yeshiva University, today they all have long beards and payas, live in Borough Park, Bavava Hasidim, and there's a beautiful scene where all his children and grandchildren are dancing with the Zayda. He's the only one there without a beard and payas, and his children say, when we see our father, we see him as he was and as he will be with a beard and payas. It's a beautiful, beautiful scene. So, but the Hasidic world in the late 40s, Jerry and I can testify, they didn't have influence. But Rabbanu Kavla changed the world. One little man about about 5'3". I learned in my Quran, we're about intimately. His years 1892 to 1962. And he came to America via Kobe, Japan. And he came, Rabbanan, with the bren. I don't know how to say that in English, but the burning desire to save as many Jews as possible. Immediately got involved with the Vat Hatzalah. By the end of 42, whoever was saved was saved. Whom you didn't save was condemned to death. At the end of 42, he called the meeting in a shul on the Lower East Side. 150 Jungalite attended, who had come to America as in Gevalgit. They were wandering around. What is a yeshiva man doing in America in those years? And Rabbanan spoke about the fact America, the boys go to college, they waste their time, there's no real learning, and we have to organize a proper yeshiva. A year later, he organized Likud, began with a handful of students. I researched how many it began with. Let me see if I can find it. About 13 students, 13. Almost all were European survivors. Why did he choose Likud? Likud, there's no college near Likud. No way to go to college. There's a farming college, an agricultural college, but Jewish boys in America are not exactly farmers. So that was one advantage of Lakewood. A second advantage, it was a resort area. This is before there were planes going down to Florida. So you went away to Lakewood during the winter to get away from the cold of New York. Lakewood is warmer than New York. Well, if Jews come down to Lakewood, you can raise money there. Hanukkah time, Purim time. So Rabbanan chose Lakewood, and of course, when you talk about Lakewood today, everyone in the world has heard of Lakewood. There's endless argument, like we used to argue, Lahavdil, who was the greatest center fielder. At one time, there were three baseball teams in New York City, and you had Mickey Mantle, you had Duke Snyder, you had Willie Mays, and the argument went on endlessly. Lahavdil, Sufficient Baseball, and Gottlieb and Taira. Today they argue, where are there more Talmidim, in Mir, in Yerushalayim, or in Lakewood? And Rabbanan actually not only refused to allow students to go to college, he planted the seeds that college is totally usher. He kind of again quoted the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Gevah Hashem Bazah, what does it mean that you embarrass the word of God if you could study Torah and you don't take the time to study Torah? And we have Rabbanan on tape, we have Rabbanan in writing, totally, completely negating, abrogating, invalidating, voiding, use any word you want, collegiate studies. Okay, Rabbanan had tremendous success. Now, you'll all wonder why, you all know Rav Nesson Kamenetsky, Rav Yaakov's son, who I know many decades, I know him already 50 plus years, know his wife, or Rav Lipschitz's daughter. In my book on the Rebbe, there's a picture of the Sheva Brachas of Reb Nassim and Shulamit, the Reb Nassim Kamenetsky, Shulamit Lipschitz. The Rebbe speaking and leaning forward and listening is Mordechai, Rav Mordechai Elephant, who today, my great grandson, is Mordechai Elephant's great, great, great nephew. So, I know the Kamenetsky's a long time. For years he's telling me, Rabbanan, he says, and if you know Nassim, he's a lively individual, tremendous mind. Oh, you had him speak, you know him. So Nassim's saying to me, whenever I meet Rabbanan, he says, I'm doing a work in history, you're going to see, it's going to be great. Dafka, the day the book came out, I met him, Davening Mincha, outside, across the street from Machne Yehuda, there's a shtibl, the sundial shul. More people daven mincha there any day during the week than pray in all the Reform and Conservative temples put together throughout the world on Shabbos. When you walk in, you know what I'm talking about, the sundial shul? You walk in, there's a minyan every minute. There's a 5 minyanim here. Then when Marav comes, they svadim daven early, they push you upstairs, there are 5 svadik minyanim downstairs, the daven mincha. It's fabulous. I met him there, and he's all excited. He shows me the books. Well, Little did we know that the world would cave in, and one dummy named Rakefet actually did a major article in Jewish Action in support. Now, why did the world cave in? And this is important to understand. And if someone told me something, called it out of context, what is it called? The Jewish Chronicle a minute ago, so if anyone's going to quote me now, they have to quote the first part of my talk. I was very positive. But you see, Nassim Kamenetsky reveals the true facts of Rabbanim's life. I know this, I told Nassim, there's nothing you revealed that I didn't know when I was alert, when we all knew it. But the world can't deal with this. The Otzko world, that is. The world, unfortunately, the black world today, which to a certain degree simply hides truth, which to me is unforgivable, but I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and if you knew the Rav, intellectual dishonesty, you could chazer on your kippah, it wasn't as bad as intellectual dishonesty. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, I can't tolerate intellectual dishonesty. So what's the true story is fascinating. Rabbanu was an Elul, he learned in Slabodka. You have to remember that this was the time of what we spoke about yesterday, the Bundist, communism, anarchism, the dream of revolution. And Rabbanim was the only one in his family who remained religious. Just like Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was the only one in his family, and I don't want to offend any Lubavitcher here, but it's an absolute fact that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was the only one in his family who remained religious. These are facts. You don't know who the Rebbe's brother was who survived the Holocaust, the brilliant mathematician who winds up in England. When he lived in Tel Aviv, he would figure out when the Chabad Shtibbel in South Tel Aviv was finishing Shabbos, Musaf, and he would walk up and down smoking his cigarette as they were coming out of the Shtibbel. This was the Rebbe's brother. By the way, his daughter, I don't know who she is, maybe she's in attendance, was the only blood relative at the Rebbe's funeral. She flew in from London. I happened to be in America at the time. And it was written up in the papers that his brother's daughter from London was the only blood relative at the funeral. I was there too. I happened to be in America at that time, and I can more or less testify that a body was carried out and buried. I know also from, I can't go into that, take a little too long, but take my word for it, I know what went on inside with the Tahara. So Rabbanu was the only one who remained free. He had an older sister, Malka, who had a Ganesha cup. If you're not born a cutler, his father was a Talmud Mufak from Luzhin, the old school. His father was a Gaon. He was a Gaon. Sister was a Gaonit. She already was studying for a doctorate at Moscow University. And she started sending him letters. My dear brother, come and be redeemed. Open your mind. The Alt of Slabodka did something which we can debate. It's questionable. I would never do it, and I've been a Rebbe for 51 years. Students, when I taught in BMT and Gold and Michalal, in my golden years of teaching, in the sense of the numbers of students I had, today is the golden years of knowledge. So I would carry letters back and forth between the boys and girls. And when they would thank me for carrying the letter, said, you don't have to thank me. I've had Dr. Charles as my teacher, the name Sasha Charles. He taught in Ramaz, and the girl I later married was my girlfriend, and he took letters from Yeshiva College to Ramaz back and forth between us. So when I took letters, I said, I'm only continuing the tradition on which I was raised. And thank God, we all had happy marriages. I am a romanticist, and I believe there's nothing more beautiful in life than a boy and girl with Yirat Shemayim and commitment and forging a new unit for the Jewish people. I'm a Catholic. I do not believe in divorce. Even though my eldest daughter makes a living out of it, unfortunately, among my students, but I have my own feelings. I know occasionally we have no choice, but still. So Rav Aaron never got the letters. The Alter hid the letters, censored the mail. In America, it's a federal offense. What about here? Is it permitted to censor mail to hide letters? In America, it's a federal offense. The Alter hid the letters. Nassim writes all this. Rabanus found out. He was so angry, he was getting ready to board the train to go to Moscow, to go to university. Rev. Reuven Brzezowski, Rav Baruch Ber's son-in-law, ran after him, pleaded with him, "You'll become a goy, stay here." And your mother remained behind. Now, those of you who are psychologists can take the story further, but these are the facts. You want an addendum to this? Give you an addendum that I didn't need Rav Nissen to tell me, because the people involved told me. I'm an ear witness. Everyone loved Rav Baruch Kotler. You didn't agree with him on everything, but Rav Baruch was Rav Baruch. I've often said to my students, many of the great Balabatim in America worship two gods, the Rav and Rav Baruch Kotler. Sam Feuerstein, Erwin Bunin, perfect examples. There are other people. I have a chavir who became Norman Bernhardt, Rabbi Bernhardt of South Africa. So I once introduced him to the Kollel. He came to see my shir, to feel what's going on in YU. I said, this man worships two gods, the Rav and the Rebbe. And he loved it, because he's a Chabadnik, but his Rebbe was the Rav. So everyone loved Rav Baron, and there's the Queen's Mafia. The Queen's Mafia is something you can't envision. It's a tremendous rabbit in Queens. These hills, Forest Hills, Hillcrest, terrific Jamaica estates, terrific rabbinate, and believe it or not, we have to make a shekhi on it. They have never had machlokes between them. Rabbis who fulfilled the Maimon Chazal, Talmidei Chachamim, Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. Could you believe it? And they're called the Queen's Mafia. There was one machlokes later with the women, with the feminism, but there it was not really a machlokes, it was one against 56. So the Queen's Mafia, so who's the head of the Queen's Mafia? A servant of the Queen, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. You don't get a name Fabian in America, let me assure you. So Fabian Schoenfeld, Rav Aaron asked Fabian to Melchizedek. Once a month, Rav Aaron said, go and visit my sister Malka, she's in a senior citizens. 1 month, Fabian calls my dear friend, Zichrono Livracha, Roy Albert, the photograph editor of my work on the Rav, the photographer of the Rav. Your picture of the Rav is Roy's picture that you publicized. And he calls Roy, and he says, Roy, what are you doing Sunday afternoon? Roy says, what are you, Fabian? What's up? He says, you want to have an interesting experience? Come with me to visit Rav Aaron's older sister, Malka. She's in the senior citizens. Fine. Fabian and Roy come in. This is the mid-50s. And Roy tells me there's a fabulous raconteur. He tells the story. They walk in. And here is Rav Aaron Kotler's older sister. This is the mid-50s when Rav Aaron's name goes from one end of the world to another. And she says, oh, my blue, it was like, you can't stand for me. I'm Azad, going to Chicago. You can't stand the rest of the McCoy in the Veld. He could have been the greatest mathematician in the world. And look what became of him, a little Rebbe. And the chutzpah of the biographer of Rav Aaron Kotler writes that his sister remained religious, although she was more open to secular education than Rav Aaron. She never married, she never remained religious, never came back to religion. And Ziyad Baklaksik, again, I don't know how to say that in English. How would you say? I really don't know. Baklak, how would you say that?
Complained.
Right, complained, cried. It's a mixture that her brother could have been, and look what became of him. So this was Reb Aaron, and Reb Aaron affected the entire Torah world in America. And I have to be honest with you, I probably am the happiest man alive because of Reb Aaron Kotler. What do I mean by that? I spoke with people privately in life. There are three factors: the right man, the right place, the right time. Anyone who's been through life knows what I'm saying. I saw the right people, the wrong place. I saw the wrong people, but it was the right time. And, you know, but to be the right person, the right place, the right time, that is a gutsach. And then you really have fulfillment. Thank God, Why do we have Kollelim in YU? You ever heard of Kollelim? When I graduated, I got Slicha 23. Out. Austrit. Get out of the yeshiva. Walk out. The word I taught you the first night I lectured. Austrit. No Kollelim. But Rabarin fought for Kollelim in America. And once they're Kollelim all over Boston, Philadelphia, New York, YU has to have Kollelim. Today, YU has, I can't even count them, 4 or 5 Kollelim, one better than the other. So thank God there's a Kollel where I can walk in every morning, and Baruch Hashem, it's my home. I owe it to Reb Aaron Cutler. He changed America. But this whole concept of not going to college was Reb Aaron Cutler, and he succeeded. Today in America, the Litvish Welt, I don't have to tell you, we sit and learn. The Hasidic world at least goes out to work. And it's the same thing in Israel. To stay, Kollel, 2 years, not more. But in America, in Israel, a Kollel until now has been almost indefinite. The joke in the Hanof is when someone is getting married, you ask them, what does the Chassan do? I learned then a Kollel. What does the chassan's father do? A learned in a kollel. What does the mother of the kala? A learned in a kollel. Everyone is in a kollel. Baruch Hashem. Now, that's the Baruch Hashem. There's a lot more to be said about him, but leave it for now. He was a giant. In Israel, there always was opposition to, in our yeshiva shetairish or velt, opposition to studying secular studies. You all heard of the name Rabbi Ruchim Diskin, the famous Rabbi Ruchim Yehuda Leib Diskin, the Rabbi of Yerushalayim, 150 years ago. Look him up, Google him, D-I-S-K-I-N. Look him up in the Judaica. You'll see who I'm talking about. He signed a famous chayrim. It's forbidden to teach English. And you should know the Eidah Haredi Eidah Haredit schools don't teach English until today. And they don't let the Agudat Yisrael forget it, because the Chinuch Atzmayim, based on that, they learn English. And if you read on the Choma, they always remind the Agudistim, you're a rotten bunch of vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, brutus, depraved, degenerate, devout, surreptitious, malevolent sinners, miscreant individuals, Pishtakim, Oisvavs, etc., Shkatsim, whatever you know them by. For two reasons. One, they accept Jewish sovereignty in the state of Israel before Mashiach. Since when is Agudas allowed to accept that? Wasn't that their viewpoint? There can be no Jew. Let's ask Mr. Harry Goodman of London, who testified at the League of Nations time and again, who spoke the King's English. There can be no Jewish sovereignty before Mashiach. The other thing that they let the Agudat Yisrael have, how dare you teach English? Walk through Mei Sharim and you'll see every few weeks there are more Paskvayas up on the wall screaming and shouting, they're going against Hachayim Hayadua, the well-known Hayim. That was Rav Diskin. It might interest you to know that his great-granddaughter tried to kill her Mufakeh in the army. This is what came out of such an attitude. Mechalel Shabbos didn't fast on Yom Kippur. They were my neighbors in my building, so don't tell me I'm making it up. Front page news in every paper in Israel. Rechov Rav Chaim Berlin, 18, identified by name. Her father was a judge, got top lawyers, so they proved that in the poison there wasn't enough to kill him just to injure him. She got 5 years in jail. She got out at the end of 3. She lives someplace in London. I have no idea if she married or not married, if she's sitting here and she was Chazeret B'tshuva. I apologize. I apologize, but again, we're swept away from Kite. Wonderful, good. Look at it a few generations later, and you'll be amazed what comes out of some of these concepts. Now, in Israel, while this attitude always existed, there is no question that it was intensified by a relative of Rav Aaron Cutler. And that, of course, is the great Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich, originally of Kletsk, of Hadaron, Rav Shach Eliezer, Harav Eliezer, Menachem Man Shach is the full name. I cite him in my work on the Rav. There's some footnotes where he differs with the Rav, etc. And I want you to know that there's few people I respect more than Rav Shach. I'll just tell you one story in a minute, which will explain why. And I'm very close to his son. He has one Ein Sikazun. Believe it or not, we were classmates in graduate school. I got my doctorate 67. He got his doctorate 68. Bernard Bevel Graduate School. So, and we knew his father was a Rosh Yeshiva, but we had no idea what would eventuate that this would be the Gadol Hadar. And until today, Effie and I remain very close because we live, one of my sons-in-law, the one who lives near me, is the president of the shul, and Effie lives on one side, I live over here. Shabbos Mincha I daven with my grandchildren, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur I daven with my grandchildren. I told someone here, when the kids were younger, every time I cried on Yom Kippur, if they saw me crying, they had to touch me, they got a shekel at the end. They added up at the end of Yom Kippur. This grandson 22 shekel, this grandson 25, but I wanted the kids on Zefashteng, what's meant to say Yom Kippur, what Yom Kippur is all about. And sitting right in front of me is Effie Shach. So we're friendly until today. This is, you know why I love his father? I'll tell you one story that says it all for our lecture, and it also explains my love. I like people who are not influenced by money. To me, and I lectured on this to Bnei Akiva, that out of the yeshiva I got Teirin Yirat Shemayim, out of Bnei Akiva I got the ability to say no to money. I was in the American Ravnit, I went in 23 years of age, when I was offered a phony heksha by Nelke Radov. Vesi harav Ratkov, Ratkov, Yevilknish sein Reich. You want to translate it? Just, you know, what's the matter, Rabbi Rothkopf? You don't want to be wealthy? At the age of 23, this was dangled in front of me. Let me not say by who, but big, big, big years. That I got out of Bnei Akiva. Rav Shach, now let me tell you a true story within every Israeli newspaper. Early 70s, Rav Shach's fame is rising. The fame of Ponovich is rising. And kids are coming in from America, Belgium, London, everyone looking at Panovich. So this kid comes in from Belgium, from Antwerp. Father's a diamond dealer, unbelievably wealthy. And the kid comes in, and they take a look twice a week. He's not there for night's sake. So I learned the language. These yeshivas, they put a tail on me. You know what the word, you use that expression here? Yes, they put a tail on me, okay? Again, I wouldn't do this. A student has to be taught trust, and if he's doing something wrong, it's his business. A Rebbe has to, you have to give a student space. This is I gave my children space. Today, one of my daughters complains that I didn't fence her in. I said, you didn't turn out too badly. A Chabad, she is, that's Chabad, Breslav, Kalbach and Cook. Not too badly. Not too badly. So but I believe you have to give space. But they put a tail on him. It's the summertime. Rav Shach went up to Tzfat to get away from the heat. Have you been in Bnei Brak in the summer? You need an oxygen mask to revive you. But in Yerushalayim and Tzfat, on the hills, Hebron, it's much cooler. He went to Tzfat to get away from it to rest. They called the Rosh Yeshiva. This was Thursday, like 7 o'clock at night. Rebbe, we found out where he's going. He's taking courses at Tel Aviv Law School. Rav Shach said, Ich komm zurück, heim banacht, I'm coming back tonight. I want to see him at 1 o'clock in the morning in my office. Till he got back from Tzfat, the driver. 1 o'clock, the kid comes into the office. Rav Shach turns his back on him and says, "Asur l'kistakel b'tnei Rasha." Why we talk about just like one blind from looking at Esav? It's for Tzachmayim Chazal. It's forbidden to look at a sinner. You're out of the yeshiva. Threw him out. No. The next morning, the kid calls Belgium. Sunday midday, his father, with the chief rabbi of Belgium, who I may rest in peace, let me not even mention his name, because you can understand from my voice, Kenham. I know his track record in all our big London, yes. They come into Rav Shach's office, 12, and they plead with Rav Shach to take the kid back. A Choshevetata, a familiar from B'nai Tera. I don't have to translate, you understand what I'm saying. And pass it down, just pass it down for me. I need it. Let me pray to Jonathan. Give me a little gas here. A Choshevetata. And the father gives Rav Shach an open check paid to the order of the Pundit Yeshiva. Rabbi, fill in whatever sum you want. Rav Shach ripped the check up and threw the kid out. Two things happened as a result. Number one, Aaron Akechik became a tremendous fan of Rav Shach, and you'll hear it over the years. I've told it in the Kollel. Number two, the kid became a very prominent lawyer in Israel with only one problem. He wears a kippah like mine, a kippah snuga, instead of a black kippah. But there's no question that this attitude against secular studies is all over the Israeli Litvisha Yeshiva scene, from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak, and wherever you turn. Now, we have these two contending forces, and I'm not here to give out grades, nor can I give out grades. I think you understand the concept of Rav Hirsch and YU has success and has failure. The concept of Rav Aaron Kotler and his... You know how Rav Shach is related to Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron Kotler is the son-in-law of Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. The Rebbetzin Petel was a daughter of Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. Rav Shach married Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer's niece. Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer made the shidduch. She was in medical school. He pulled her out and made the shidduch with his Talmud Mufak. And she was a very highly trained nurse who did many medical procedures in Yerushalayim. So they're related. Rav Shach is married to Rav Issa Zalman's to Perel Meltzer Kutler's first cousin. They're related. There's no question their point of view has had many winners, also many losers. What is the reality today for those seeking a broader Torah education for their children? Now let me come back to YU. No question that YU is the flagship of what you want to call modern orthodoxy, what the Kefet calls orthodoxy in Western context, centrist orthodoxy, that's Rabbi Lamb's expression. YU is a major player. YU is a very fascinating institution. I alluded to it last night. Rav Hirsch did not, would not, we're talking about his grandson, Rav Yosef Breuer, his great-grandchildren in America, not the ones in Israel. Israel's a different story altogether. The Breuers all went off the path and became Polia Guder, and from there they became Mizrahiites. And I'm very friendly with many Breuers. But in America, Breuers has gone right wing. You know two ways about it. I told you with Lakewood, the controversy, Frankel, Bethoffer. These are well-known controversies. Rav Hirsch would not approve of one, because Rav Hirsch had a vision, and in that vision, all aspects of life have to be under the banner of Torah. Why you evolved? No one had a vision. No one had a vision. Why you evolved? The students wanted a high school. After a high school, you need a college. After a college, you need a graduate school. After a graduate school in Judaic studies, you need a medical school. You're training men, you have to train women. You have no idea how much money YU got for women to go into science, medicine. They don't have to pay any tuition. One woman died, Ann Sheba. You heard about the Ann Sheba story? Nobody knows who she was. No rabbi remembers her. This was a woman on the west side of New York who lived to be, I think, 98. She had no children, never married. Left her entire estate. She was a secretary. But it turns out when she took retirement in the late 40s, she took all her money and bought Coca-Cola stock. Do I have to tell you what Coca-Cola is? Her lawyer bought her a colored television. She said, what do I need it for? I have a black light. She said, Anne, you can afford anything in the world. At least have a colored television. She left all her money to Stern College. The lawyer calls Dr. Lamb. It's a true story. Lamb tells the secretary, I don't have time to talk to Michigan. Some old woman died and left us a few $100,000. Big deal. Tell him I can't talk with him. The man had to use protexia to get the lawyer to get an appointment with Dr. Lamb and to be able to tell the president of Yeshiva University that I'm giving you $23 million. By the way, that money was then challenged by her nieces and nephew, went to court with a phony suit that she was brainwashed. Why you spoke to her? Why do you know who she was? Anyway, it took a few years until they ruled. Why you gets the money? Where do you think that money was invested? With Madoff. When it was pulled out, no, don't get upset. $32 million were pulled out of the Madoff investment fund 2 years later. That was Merkin. Ezra Merkin, whom you should know. I know him, you know, I taught his brothers. Ezra invested with Madoff. Why you pulled it out? You see, they may want to collect it back now. Why you pulled it out? It was $32 million, or $23 million. All that money goes for scholarships for women, and she said she always wanted to go to college. In her days, no woman went to college. And she's so proud when she reads in the New York Times about Stern College for Women. Could you imagine? So this is why you. But you have to be aware of one thing. Why you has total academic freedom. No one until today has been able to interfere with the college. The Rav, this was Rabbi Rebel's will, this was Rabbi Belkin's will. More important, it was the Rav's will. If you look into my second volume on the Rav, I consider this my greatest contribution to scholarship about the Rav. I reproduce a talk he gave to the graduates of Yeshiva. It's called the YURA, Yeshiva University Rabbinic Alumni. My apologies. Every someone said to me, why is it in America everything goes with abbreviations? It's like the Israeli army. To figure out what they're talking about in the army, you have to know 1,000 different abbreviations. YU, America, KAJ, KJ, and this reads, and this YU. Total academic freedom. No one can interfere. The Rav, in this talk to YURA, describes where he's different than Rav Hirsch. And he says clearly, Rav Hirsch believed in a Catholic college. I don't believe in it. If you're going to go to college, the college has to be real. And he says, and this is the Rav now with a sense of humor, I'm proud of my students who until 3 o'clock are in a real yeshiva. And at 3 o'clock they go upstairs to a real college. And if people accuse us of having two heads, better to have two heads than none. Quote, end quote, from the Rav. See it in detail in my work. It was in Yiddish, but I translated into English. I actually gave the whole talk in the Kollel many years ago. I don't believe it's on the website. I believe it's before they started recording. It's a powerful talk. It's the only time I know that the Rav ever let his hair down and discussed secular education and discussed Rav Hirsch and discussed his own thinking. There's no other time, and I checked with other Talmidim of the Rav in Israel who are quite learned, and we all agree there was never another time like the 56 YURA talk. So Yeshiva College, the classes are a full university. They have been machloket, they have art. I don't have to tell you, if you go to the famous museums in the great city of London, you're going to see a lot of nudity. That's a problem. Although in my youth, I remember Cholomoyed Sukkos being in a museum in New York, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the biggest museum perhaps in the world outside of the Hermitage. And I remember seeing Hasidic Rebbe with his family looking at a nude and explaining it. And I don't know, maybe he knew what he was doing. He was giving these kids the ability to live in the world around us. But it's a problem, nudity. My wife is an artist. She had the problem when she was taking her bachelor's in art. I have grandchildren. I don't know where they get such chassidus, but they won't walk through the mall on the way to the Kotel. I walk through this new mall, this fabulous, no more steps to climb, the Mamilla Mall. So my grandson tells me, how can you walk through there? There are pornography in the windows. I said, what are you talking about? Then I walk through, the kid is so sensitive, color kavod, that I have such grandchildren, I'm overwhelmed. But you know, you walk through a mall, so you see certain pictures of women in clothes. This is the window. How pornographic can it be? But this kid was sensitive. So these are problems. You have teachers who curse a mile a minute. I told you, I had one teacher, English literature, Dr. Fleischer. Every class, he used every cuss word in the world against Dr. Belkin. Dr. Belkin couldn't throw him out. Dr. Belkin didn't get angry. So Zayn Gesund, may the Tsar bless him and keep him far from here. But this is Yeshiva University. Is it a good experience? For me, it was fabulous because it gave me the ability to deal with the real world. And I spoke with you yesterday about mythology. This is Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University gave birth to some other institutions on the American scene. And fascinating. First of all, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander, who is the one that I did my doctorate under his general guidance. He was dean of the graduate school. Talmud Bufak of Rabbi Rebel. He broke away from Yeshiva University early 70s. There are many theories why. I'm not certain what theory is correct, but he evidently had a vision that he should be president, and he saw he's not being considered. They speak of assistance to Rabbi Belkin, and he was not one of them. Rabbi Rackman came in, then Rabbi Miller came in, Rabbi Emanuel Rackman, Rabbi Israel Miller. He broke away and he organized Touro College. Touro College was a play on words, meaning Touro was a great American Jew, Moshe Aaron Touro, the revolutionary period, a from Jew. But Touro also sounds like Torah. So when he named it Touro College, he had in mind Torah College. Touro has expanded greatly with many divisions. It has something like 25,000 students all over the world. Some of the schools are Jewish, some of the schools are not Jewish. And Rabbi Lander, Dr. Lander, and I have a very, very close relationship with him all the decades. There are reasons why. I did my doctorate on his Rebbe, and evidently he was pleased with the results. And Rabbi Lander explained to me, he said, I believe in Torah and Mada, Torah and science like wine with all my heart, but I don't think it should be under one roof. And I have different institutions for different purposes. I have a college for women, a college for girls, I have a graduate school, now he's going into a medical school. He just bought a medical school for $53 million from the Catholic Church upstate New York. And he says, I have schools in Moscow, in China. I use the money I get for the Torah schools. He also has a yeshiva in Queens, which his son heads up. What do they call it? It's Chaim, if I'm not mistaken, right off Main Street. Danny Lander is the Rosh Yeshiva. No college there, just learning. Beautiful building, built with Jerusalem stone. You can't miss the beauty of that building. Then there was a lot of pressure on him because YU has one advantage. You don't have to waste time. You're in one building. You went upstairs. We were literally, Jerry and I went to school in one building. High school, college, yeshiva in one building, what's today called the main academic center. Today, there are endless buildings. Today, there's even a building you haven't dreamt about. There's a new base medrash that what they tell me it's the height of luxury. Every Rosh Yeshiva has his own. I used to say I'm the only Rosh Yeshiva with my own office. Had a miracle in Gris, something they built new offices, and the secretaries fought for me to have my own office. I shouldn't bother them so much. So, but today, every Rebbe has his office. So there was pressure. You don't waste any time. All right, today you have to walk around the corner, so you lose five minutes. A number of years ago, under the Greater Touro umbrella, a new yeshiva college was opened, Lander College, right between Hillcrest and Kew Gardens Hills, between Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim. If you know Queens, what a location. Beautiful campus. Yeshiva College, Lander College? Absolutely not. Rabbi Hirsch would be very proud of Lander College. Two of my dearest friends who taught NYU from time immemorial left in anger, the place is not room enough. The college can teach whatever it wants. Rabbi Abba Braunschweig, who became the Rosh Yeshiva of Touro, and among the faculty, Rabbi Teddy or Yehuda Hans. Two YU heavyweight rabbis. And I go there every once in a while to visit, to say hello, to see how they're doing. And they boast to me, no course can be offered in the college without our approval. We have to approve the course, and we have to approve the faculty member that he's a Ben Torah. That is a Catholic college. That's what the Rebbe is referring to. So today in America, you have a choice. And tour and land the college, turns out students who have gone on to become medical doctors, dentists, lawyers, bankers, every profession, and successful. Touro, which has many branches, serves a fabulous niche today. Anyone know what I'm talking about? The Haredi world, the Hasidic world, flocks to Touro. You have in Flatbush, the heart of Flatbush, a tremendous building, right opposite Flatbush Yeshiva High School, Touro College. One day a week, women only. The next day, men only. They have a branch in Borough Park, Caleb of Borough Park. I was just in Stamford Hill today. I got a wonderful tour, and I can tell you, Eidat Nemana, it does not come near Borough Park. It's maybe a Zeran pin, but not in the number of Jews, and not in the homes. If you walk through Borough Park, it's mind-boggling how much money in real estate you're looking at. On every block, you're looking at half $1 billion worth of real estate. Siddishi Yidden. All right, Stamford Hill is Stamford Hill, but it ain't Borough Park. They can't call it Touro College. They'll put them in Chayrim. You know what it's called? Machon Leparnasa. Institute to enable a livelihood. Now, members of the Yeshiva University Board rant and rage against Touro. And one member who was chairman of the Board of Greeks and chairman of the Bernard Rebel Graduate School, he once said to me, I'll tell you the difference between us and Touro. Yeshiva University educates. Touro grants degrees. There's truth to that. But if you think of the Hasidic world, that they're getting bachelors and masters, and they're now even permitting Hasidim to study psychology because they have so many problems, you've got to give Bernie Lander a lot of credit. So in America, there is no question about it, some real choice today. And essentially, the difference between Lander College, which is the flagship of the Touro institutions, and Yeshiva University is the difference between Rabbi Hirsch and Rabbi Soloveitchik, and add on Rabbis Belkin and Revel. Before I come to the Israeli scene, I just want to tell you, you're welcome to take copies of this. This is a very fascinating document I'm holding in my hands. Remember yesterday I spoke about the various winds of contention in Yeshiva University. This just was distributed 2 weeks ago after the conference on homosexuality. I see some of the photograph here is... part of it is cut off. These are okay. These are okay. Afterwards, I see it's cut off. This was just issued by the president of Yeshiva University and the dean. These are cut off. And the dean of Greece. You know what makes this very fascinating? First of all, the content reveals to you the tensions going on. Secondly, look at the letterhead. The letterhead reads, Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary. So you have to ask a simple question. If this letter is being issued and President Richard Joel is signing, why not Yeshiva University? Why on the letterhead of Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary? If they would issue it on the letterhead of Yeshiva University, people would complain to the federal government, and you should know about this from what's going on here, and all aid to Yeshiva University would be stopped because they are showing prejudice against what the New York Times calls a sexual preference or an alternate lifestyle, which is perfectly normative according to the New York Times and those who control the public thoroughfare of the United States. Therefore, it has to be issued on Reed Stationery because legally today, since 1970, Reed's is separated from Yeshiva University. It is called an affiliate of Yeshiva University. It has a separate charter, a separate legal standing, and technically Reed's gets no money from the federal government, because it's a school for the training of rabbis. And that will explain to you why rabbis are coming. Israel, 10 minutes, it's going to kill me. Israel, visa kripsel sich in America, say you look sich in Israel. Israel ultimately becomes a reflection of America. What's fascinating about Israel is that the Haredi world is starting to rupture. How long can you go on without educating children? They need parnasa. You're a wealthy man, so you can afford to support three children. Fine. So you have three sons, Itzan and Laron, or two sons and a son. But your sons, each one has six children now. The next generation, they're 18 children. Not one son earns a living. Or not one son-in-law. They're all sitting and learning. We have a tremendous problem. And the birth rate in the Haredi world, Baruch Hashem, is substantial. As you know, Israel has the highest birth rate among any Jewish community in the world. Thank God. So in Israel, we are seeing the start, number one, of new types of institutions. The flagship institution is Machon Lev. Beit Sefer Gavoa LeTechnologia, prominently called Machon Lev. There is no other institution like it in the world. I told people, I have such nachar, I generally daven mincha there before I give shir on Sunday, and daven marav, of course, that after shir at one of their later marims, because on Sunday I teach late afternoon. It's unbelievable. You walk in, tremendous base medrash modeled after Yeshiva University, Ksilim of every stripe there. Litvakim. Mizrahi people. Every language under the sun. Hebrew, English, Yiddish, French, Russian, Amharic. What kind of institution is it? Totally like Lander College. There, no liberal arts taught at all. But science, math, accountancy, nursing is now being taught. They have a branch for women, just like Yeshiva University developed Stern College. They developed Machon Tal for women, exactly the same. Rav Hirsch would heartily approve of Machon Lev. And even Rav Shach gave Professor Lev, whom I knew so well, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, his blessing, because Professor Lev promised him he would never call it a yeshiva and never give smicha. It's Beit Sefer Gavoha LeTechnologia. What's even more interesting is that this impacted upon Bar Ilan University. And Bar Ilan today has a kollel and a midrashah, where men and women can come and learn exactly the way they study in Yeshiva University. And I've often said, what is the difference between Yeshiva University and Bar Ilan? Yeshiva University is a yeshiva that gave birth to a university. Bar Ilan is a university that gave birth to a yeshiva. And therefore it is a tremendous university, Jew, Gentile, Arab, etc. But if you wish, on the Bar Ilan campus today, you can have a fabulous Yeshiva University type experience. You sign up for the Kollel program or for the Midrashah program. The environment, just like Yeshiva University, total academic freedom. No one can tell a professor what to teach, how to teach. More than that, and I'm heading to a conclusion that you will remember as long as you walk the face of the earth with what happened to me here in this community. And I'll share it with you. I don't know within 10 minutes, but maybe it'll be 11 or 12. Another aspect in Israeli life that those of you who don't have children living in Israel can't start to comprehend. I've often said that children in Israel have no youth, and what's even better or worse, they don't even know they don't have youth, because they turn bar mitzvah, and from that moment on, more and more they have to talk about the God. What are you going to do? How are you going to do it? See all my grandsons. God has blessed me with many wonderful grandchildren. And I watch them grow up. All right. Without that army, we would not have a state of Israel. And what's amazing about the army, and you know the Haredim, anti-army, anti-this, anti-everything, without an army, you wouldn't have a B'nai Brak. Let's be honest. What are you being anti? More than that, it's an open Gemara. It's a total obligation to serve in the Israeli army today. It's Lieutenant Mitzvah, Gemara, Saita, that learn the Sugya, and you'll never understand the Haredi world. All right, I say they also make reforms. What can I tell you? It's impossible for me to justify not serving in the army. I'll tell you the truth. Rabbi Lichtenstein wrote an article, early 80s, in Tradition. Tell me, you able-bodied men sitting here, did you serve in the army? Where did you find the hetter? Because you live in London, that exempts you from serving in the Israeli army? I don't know, the Gemara doesn't say living in London or New York exempts you from saving the Jewish people from annihilation. The army has made such tremendous steps to accommodate the Haredim today that years ago, you spoke of the army, you went in with a kippah through God, and it became, in modern Hebrew, you know the expression? Kippah zruka, thrown away, lizrok. Today in the army, do you have any idea how many kids become firm because they're exposed to Torah for the first time in their lives? Think for a minute. And the army has gone out of their way. And you got to give the army credit. You think it's easy to deal with Hester when they only serve 18 months instead of 3 years? And you got to integrate them into regular units. And you think it's easy to deal with Nachal Haredi when they insist upon a certain heksha? You know, many times it's all it's the same heksha. You know, Ribbono Shel Olam, we have types today with 3-4 heksheim on. Mind-boggling. What do you think? They're 4 mashgichim. It's 1 mashgiach, but each one approves, and that way they have 4 areas of avenues in which they can sell. Sometimes I look. What are you looking at? My wife says. I say, I'm looking first of all to see how many calories it has, and secondly, I'm looking to see the cholesterol. At my age, you have to look. And third, I'm looking to see how many heksheim it has. Who's going to win the heksheim prize? The Haredi world, I don't have to tell you. Without the army, you can't become part of Israeli society. Without the army, many doors are closed to you. And there has been a sea change. And I'll come back to it in a moment. So let me reiterate. These are real problems. I'm not here to denigrate Chas v'Chalila Rabban Kafa. This was his viewpoint. I benefit from it. Yael has a kollel, and I have a place to hang my hat. I don't agree with that viewpoint, obviously. Rav Shach, you think for a minute of Rosh Yeshiva who rips up a check. You just think what's going on now with the fallout, with the manuvel and the manuvelet. If you know what's going on with your own Rabbi Duna from this community, the man is being eaten up by lions because he dared to say exactly what I said, word by word. You just think. And Rav Shach ripped the check up. Kol HaKavod, Rabbi Abedun, I'm talking about. He's in Israel right now. They're beating him on all sides, on every street corner, with every pasquale, etc. But we want to educate our children. We come from a tradition of Torah, their heritage, Torah, Mata, call it what you wish. In America, there have been tremendous innovations, and I want to tell you, as someone who loves Yeshiva University, I would love to see 100 Yeshiva universities. There's so many from people in America, and nothing keeps you more honest than competition. How did Chazal say it? Kinat Sofrim, Tarbeh Chochmah. When we have jealousy, it increases knowledge. There are differences, big differences. Yeshiva University, Lander College, the Torah schools, Machon LePanasa. What happens in America has affected Israel. Machon Lev is a direct copy of Yeshiva University, except as Professor Lev explained to me, it has to be tailored to the Israeli scene. And in order to get Rav Shach's approval, it had to be pure science. And as you know, all the teachers among the Kohen Lev essentially are from the Yeki school of Torah and Derech Eretz, including Nassim Slifkin's father, who was slaughtered recently because of his Vagumon, where he deals with creation and how old the world is, etc. Even Bar Ilan, that began as purely a secular university under Mizrahi auspices, even there today, there is a kollel and a midrashah, and so many American youngsters are going there and are happy there, and they come in Aliyah, they don't want to go back to Yeshiva College, they don't want to go back to Stern College, and they have choice. The army is has shifted gears remarkably. Barak's fight now against Habracha is one of the final gasps of the old guard who do not realize the public culture in Israel has changed. It's a vastly different country in so many different ways than the one I came in Aliyah to 41 years ago. Most of the changes are Lebracha Ula Tehillah. And I went in one day with a story that says it all about the Nachal Haredi. I have four grandsons who did or are doing Nachal Haredi. I just got news that one of my grandsons, Nachal Haredi, achieved his initial dream now. My daughter just told me today he was invited to Kurs Mefakdim, which he had told me a few months ago that his dream is to be a Mefakeh, to be a, it's called a Maki, Mefakeh Kita. He raised Mefakeh Kuya, this is the next step. And if he does well, in a year or two, he'll be invited to Kurs Katsinim, which I believe is his dream, much to my wife's despair, I would say. But each child has to choose. God should watch over him and all the soldiers. And he's a Nachal Haredi, and I've been to many Nachal Haredi family affairs when the youngsters get their gun, their Bible, later when they get their kumtah, their unit hat, later when they go through advanced training and they graduate. And I know the Nachal Haredi, and it's inspiring. And they just celebrated 10 years since this idea took hold, took root. And a book just appeared, a bestseller in Israel, Charedim Legoralam. It's a play on words. Charedim. They're worried about what will happen to them. In other words, they want to be accepted. They want to be part of Israeli society. It's a play on words. Charedi, Charedim Legoralam by David Zeldin. And the book, I couldn't put it down. I couldn't put the safer down. And finally, I come to the very end, and it tells a story about one young man shows his bar mitzvah picture with a big kaftan and a shtreimel. And he was raised in Brisk, his father in Briska. And this kid, when he was like 16 already, he was different than the other kids. They went to the zoo, and the other kids would just look and run. And he would look at the animals and why are they different, and he would ask questions. And then every word I'm telling you is true, and you'll see the addendum. And then one time they caught him talking to a girl. He was 16, 17. No, if they catch you talking to a girl in the Brisk circles, those circles, the Rabaralas, and Brisk, like Rabarala, are bedmates today. The first thing they do, if the father has money, he buys the kid a ticket for Borough Park. Get him off to Borough Park there, you can do whatever the heck you want, and you can still be so-called Haredi in appearance. If you don't have money for Borough Park, pardon me, they buy a ticket for Stamford Hill, London. His father bought a ticket for London. The kid refused to leave Israel. He ran away from home. He met an American rabbi from Chicago, the son of an American rabbi. The son was Fuchs, was educated in Israel already. And Rabbi Fuchs Jr. spoke with this kid, said, why do you have to throw all of religion away? You can be a religious Zionist and have everything and be from. You have a word today, chadali, I think I've taught it to you, charedim datiyim le'umiyim. Just as from, the women all cover their hair. It's a different world today. The men will learn daf yomi, and they're part of the Israeli Zionist religious thing. And the kid says, well, I want to go into the army. So Rabbi Fuchs says, well, Nachal Haredi is organizing. I'll make the contact for you. They make the contact. This kid comes into the army. And they show him in his army uniform, handsome, handsome young man with a big kippah, a black kippah, but he's no longer wearing a bekesher, a shrine, etc. No home to go to. He becomes a chayal bodei. The family won't let him visit home. My grandson's telling me about all these cases they've met in Nachal Haredi. The army has to rent apartments for them, that they should have a place to come for Shabbos, and families adopt them. And the kid is just about finishing his army service. And it's Friday, and he's in the Kavion at Malcha. Right, the big shop, the biggest shopping center in the Middle East, which happens to be at the foot of Bayit Vagan, Malcha, the Kanyon of Malcha. By the way, they say the pronounced word is Kinyon of Malcha, but no one ain't that in the dictionary, but today ain't is in the dictionary because people use ain't. So I have to stick to Kanyon, even though Kinyon may be more correct. And And he gets on the bus, he's going to his family for Shabbat. Why do you bring a family coming for Shabbat? A bouquet of flowers? Gets on the bus. How many of you know Hebrew? Can I tell you in the original? Anyone not know Hebrew? Okay. I'll tell it in both. Translate. So he gets on the bus, and he sits down in the Shalayim Dikka bus. They have a certain kedusha about them. And a young girl sitting opposite him says, Chayal, b'shulmi aprachim elu? Soldier, for whom are these flowers? And he says, b'shvileich, gives her the flowers. She says to him, ma ta'aseh b'tzava, ani gam hayiti b'tzava, achshav yishtaklati, I also was in the army, I just got out now. What do you do? He says, I'm in Nachal Charedi. I'm in Nachal Charedi. She says, I'll tavod alai. Don't fool around with me. You're in Nachal Charedi, she says. Where's your beard? Where's your payas? In a minute you've come, you were born in Meir Sharim and your native language is Yiddish. And he says, I'm bothered to be born in Meir Sharim. In Yiddish, it's my mutter tongue. And the girl faints. P.S. They were married. 3 months later, they have 4 children today. The girl is the daughter of the chief rabbi of Holland. I told the story in your rabbi's house, and a Rebbetzin named, very strange name, Fia, started to jump up and down and practically fainted. That is my niece. And with that, I want to wish you a Shabbat Shalom and a Barach. I'm cautioning you once again. If you're a Mizrahiite, hear me speak Shabbos morning, I'll give you a gift that will end all arguments that you will ever have with people who are not Mizrahiites. If you're not a Mizrahiite, don't come to hear me speak because you'll never sleep again the rest of your life. And hear me again with health and happiness. Das Vadami. Thank you very much. Don't forget this about the homosexuals. It's a fascinating, fascinating document.
Rabbi Rakevin, we are speaking also between you from Shabbos afternoon and the final speech. The final lecture will be Sunday morning at 9 o'clock right after Dominic. I'm my friend, Rabbi Meir Kaha.
You got it.